Good afternoon, this is Mountain Edition. I'm Allison Bektesh.
And I'm Wyatt Orm. Ski season is here, and with that comes avalanches, both natural and man-made.
We check in with District 5 State Senator Carrie Donovan.
Aspen's mayor joins others in reaching out to the president-elect regarding climate change.
And one of our reporters goes on a ride-along with the British cop in Glenwood Springs.
These stories and more coming up on Mountain Edition. This year's sporadic early snowfall has made for ripe avalanche conditions in the Aspen area.
Humans triggered avalanches 5 days in a row this week, and the Department of Natural Resources is urging caution in the backcountry. North-facing slopes stay shaded and have the most snow. Blaze Reardon is the local backcountry forecaster for the Colorado Avalanche Information Center.
In this time of year, it's really important to keep in mind that, you know, the slopes that are most attractive for riding are also probably the slopes where that weak layer is. So there's a lot of rough terrain out there that you don't want to get drugged through.
The 5 reported avalanches in the Aspen area were all remotely triggered, which means the slide happened as much as 1,000 feet away from the skiers who caused it. Richmond Ridge on the backside of Aspen Mountain, a slope near Margie's Hut, and Express Creek all experienced slides this week. Reardon recommends backcountry adventurers avoid side hilling on north-facing slopes until increased snowfall stabilizes the snowpack.
Pitkin County Open Space and Trails is investing millions of dollars in an effort to preserve a ranch in basalt. Aspen Public Radio's Elizabeth Stewart Severy reports.
Pitkin County is offering a longtime local family over $5 million to conserve 260 acres, stretching from Light Hill to the Roaring Fork River and bordering Basalt High School. The Rio Grande Trail runs through the property, and Open Space and Trails Acquisitions Director Dale Will says it's a prime spot.
The conservation of this ranch protects scenery, agriculture, and habitat, and really enhances recreation by providing the permanent buffer around the Rio Grande Trail as well.
The easement also includes protection of agricultural water rights for 125 irrigated acres. The property owners, the Cerise family, would continue to own and operate their ranch. While the agreement protects most of the area from development, it does allow for up to 6 homes on a 15-acre building envelope. The Board of County Commissioners plan to discuss the purchase on Wednesday, December 7th. Elizabeth Stewart Severy from the Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Last week, elected officials in Eagle County initially approved plans for a controversial subdivision in the Mid-Valley. The Fields is a 19-acre property near the intersection of Highway 82 and Valley Road.
The Eagle County Community Center in Elgibel was packed at 3:30 yesterday afternoon. The Board of Commissioners heard from the developer, the Colorado Department of Transportation, and from members of the community. Using a PowerPoint presentation, the developer reiterated why adding around 100 new residences across Highway 82 from Blue Lake is a good idea. It'll prevent sprawl with a mix of affordable and, quote, attainable housing options. They've also developed a plan to improve traffic immediately for everybody, even with the additional residents. A CDOT representative said the developer's plan would improve traffic, but not drastically. The current and proposed traffic situations both fail by their standards. During the public comment period, Edward Sullivan, who lives nearby, was skeptical of the developer's promises.
Can the neighborhood absorb 1 or 2 dozen more homes? Yes. Can it absorb doubling or quadrupling of the number of residences? I say no.
But there were others, like a young woman who told commissioners the project provides affordable housing, which could reduce her commute.
No one wants to drive an hour and a half back and forth to work each way. It's 3 hours out of your day that you could be with your kids.
Commissioners will continue the review of the proposal and consider the public's feedback while doing so.
After 3 years of back and forth on how to revamp and expand municipal offices in Aspen, the local government is getting ready to review its own land use application. Carolyn Zachariasen reports.
Last week, City Council approved nearly $2 million for architectural design and project management services. The work will go toward expanding what's known as, quote, the Galena Building, which is where the Chamber of Commerce currently is located and is attached to the parking garage. Local resident Tony Kronberg told the council there is confusion among members of the public as to what the city is actually building since the plans have changed so much over the past several months. She's concerned that money is being spent before the public can weigh in on what the building's size, design, and impacts are. Mayor Steve Skadron says this project is no different than what would be done in the private sector. It's just that the city is acting as the developer.
We've come up with a project that I'm not familiar with right now. Everyone said things have changed. It's not on Galena Plaza anymore. It's in the parking lot.
It was never on Galena Plaza, Tony.
Well, it
nothing
rises,
was ever being built on Galena Plaza.
Above Galena Plaza. Maybe that's the best way to put it. It rises above Galena.
And
it may not be on the plaza.
Tony, the land use process is moving forward. It starts with review at P&Z, just like every building in town goes through, and the city is following the same procedure that the private sector follows.
The city's development team has submitted a land use application, which the Planning and Zoning Commission is scheduled to review on January 3rd. It then heads to City Council and then back to P&Z for final approval. In a work session tonight, council members are scheduled to discuss what services the building will house. Conceptual plans show that the building will be two levels and will be home to most city departments. There are plans for more office space in two other buildings as well, the adjacent Rio Grande building and the Armory, which is where City Hall is now located. Carolyn Zachariasen, Aspen Public Radio News.
Two members of Colorado's Electoral College have filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court challenging the Electoral College system and the way Colorado binds electors. Benta Berkland reports.
The electors say they shouldn't be forced to rubber stamp a vote for Hillary Clinton for president just because she won the popular vote in Colorado. The goal of the lawsuit is to undermine laws in 29 other states that also bind their electors to the popular vote. The hope is that electors in states that went for President-elect Donald Trump would reject him when they cast their Electoral College vote on December 19th. It's considered a significant long shot that there would ever be enough rogue electors to tip the election away from Trump. Colorado's Republican Secretary of State Wayne Williams blasted the lawsuit, calling it, quote, an arrogant attempt by two faithless electors to elevate their personal desires over the entire will of the people of Colorado.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. To stay up to date with news in the Roaring Fork Valley, follow us on social media. Like us on Facebook. Find Aspen Pub Radio on Twitter or follow us on Instagram. Aspen Public Radio, your news, your music, your station.
Aspen Mayor Steve Skadron is showing that all politics is local, particularly when it comes to climate change. He and many other mayors across the country are hoping the president-elect will listen. Elizabeth Stewart Severy sat down with Skadron last week to discuss the role that local governments will play in protecting the climate under the next administration.
So, as the mayor of Aspen, you've signed on to a couple different letters urging Trump to act on climate change. Are you hopeful that this will make a difference?
Am I hopeful? We have to do everything we can at a local level to ensure that the work we've already done doesn't go for naught. Good things will come of this election, and one of those good things might be that action will be pushed down to the local level and will be even more progressive and more active and more successful locally, perhaps without the expectation that those people in Washington will get it done for us. There is a generational shift that I'm seeing, and the next generation and the generation following that one, and even the next generation. I spent an hour this morning with the third graders at Aspen Elementary School. They're filled with hope, and they see the world quite differently than we do. And they see the obligation they have, both on their shoulders and the shoulders of their parents, to ensure that their future, that they have access to our public lands and clean air and water, just like we had. So that's reassuring to me.
What do you think are some of the key things that need to happen on a national level to benefit Aspen on a local level?
Yeah. I've said all along that the strength of our local economy is directly tied to the health of our natural environment. And we can only do so much in getting our own house in order. But Aspen's fate is directly tied to the actions that other communities may or may not take.
Right. And a lot of environmental groups are really concerned about what might happen at a national level. Do you think it's enough for action to happen at a local level? Will that be enough in the face of an administration that doesn't act on climate change?
The answer is yes, it is. It has to be. There's no option. We can get done locally what they can't get done nationally. And I think that it's our moral obligation to act at a local level. We have an obligation to save all this beauty for the next generation. So regardless of what happens at a national level, we need to act locally.
That was Aspen Mayor Steve Skadron talking with Elizabeth Stewart Severy.
Without snowmaking to fill in nature's gaps, the chairlifts wouldn't be running right now. And as Aspen Skiing Company taps area creeks to make it possible, it's not without concern that it's depleting natural resources. Again, Elizabeth Stewart Severy.
It's late November on Aspen Mountain. Normally, you'd be hearing a steady low roar from the snowmaking machines that line the Little Nell ski run. But tonight, it's just the hum of generators and crunch of truck tires on dirt, not even a snowmobile. It's 27.5 degrees, too warm for the high-efficiency automated machines to kick on. But snowmakers Patrick Cook and Chaz Pfeiffer say the forecast
looks just outstanding. Yeah, we got -1, I think, a week from Saturday.
The temperatures did drop, and with some help from Mother Nature, Cook and the crew of snowmakers on Aspen Mountain set the foundation for some post-Thanksgiving turns, albeit later than usual. The slow start to the season had skiers and riders nervous, but Aspen Skiing Company's sustainability guru, Auden Schendler, says the warm weather wasn't all bad news.
You could argue that if you just cared about efficiency with snowmaking, the ideal year would be that it's way too hot until the moment you want to make snow, and then it gets cold and you make a lot of snow.
Of course, most skiers don't only care about efficiency. Most want to ski as much as possible and as early in the season as possible. And this sets up a tricky situation. A warming climate is undeniably detrimental to the ski industry. But the man-made snow solution is at best a wet band-aid.
So you're using a very energy-intensive fix to deal with a changing climate, and the fix cannibalizes the very climate you care about.
So from a business standpoint, how does SkiCo adapt? Besides making sure lifts can take people downhill too, planning for warm weather business like the proposed recreation park at Snowmass, and lobbying for environmental action, Schendler says,
there's not a whole lot a ski resort can do other than buff out snowmaking.
And that process, particularly on Aspen Mountain, takes a lot of energy and millions of gallons of water. Snowmaking systems on SkiCo's four mountains pull from the nearest streams. Highlands uses Castle Creek, Buttermilk pulls from Maroon Creek, and Snowmass takes from Snowmass Creek. But Aspen Mountain is somewhat unusual in that snowmaking operations use treated city water, and that water has to be pumped from town all the way up to 10,625 feet. Snowmaker Patrick Cook stands outside the SkiCo's pump house on Little Nell, where compressors send air and water all over the mountain through underground pipes.
We pump uphill with four pumps to the Ruthie's restaurant where we have a booster pump house, and there's three more pumps in there which get us up over the hill.
And into the storage pond near the Gents Ridge lift. Cook says that pond holds about 3 or 3.5 million gallons of water, not even a tenth of the water consumed by snowmaking operations on Ajax, which means that uphill pumping to refill the pond happens regularly and takes a lot of energy. Schendler says SkiCo has worked to reduce consumption and improve efficiency in dozens of snowmaking machines across the four mountains. The biggest improvement recently has been at Snowmass. Hauling water from mountain streams in the winter when flows are at their lowest points can be damaging to the environment. In 2012, SkiCo retained the rights to store water at Ziegler Reservoir and now can pull water during peak runoff to be used months later.
So this is a giant environmental victory, both because it protects Snowmass Creek, but also it makes us able to make snow more efficiently.
But Schendler also points out that efficiency in snowmaking is only a small fraction of dealing with a warmer world.
We need to change how we're fueling our economy. We're utterly dependent on the climate.
This is especially clear as snowmaking operations rely on cold weather, and Aspen is seeing fewer and fewer days with sub-freezing temperatures. But the reality of warmer Novembers doesn't ease pressure from skiers and riders who want to hit the slopes by Thanksgiving.
I'd like the industry as a whole to declare a kind of a disarmament and say, we'll open when it snows and be more based on natural cycles. But as you know, we don't live in that kind of a world.
Elizabeth Stewart-Severy from the Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Colorado is expected to see modest job growth next year across many industries. The new economic outlook was released Monday by CU Boulder's Lead School of Business. Benson Berkland has more from the state capitol.
Employment growth will be lower than in previous years, but still at about 2.5%. The economic report says construction and leisure and hospitality will experience the highest rates of growth. Jobs in natural resources and mining will largely remain flat. Agriculture will also take a hit. Economists say that's partly because of low prices for cattle and grain, combined with recent weather fluctuations and drought. Colorado is expected to remain in the top 10 states for employment growth in the coming year. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
Now that cold temperatures have settled into the valley, motorists are letting their engines run longer. The practice has emerged as an issue in Carbondale.
In Aspen, a vehicle can idle for 5 minutes each hour. In Basalt, for no more than 2 consecutive minutes. Vehicles in Carbondale get 10 minutes before they're ticketed. The town's environmental board wants to change that. Natalie Ray Fuller is 24. She's the youngest member of Carbondale's environmental board. She's pushing for the town trustees to shorten the allowed idling time from 10 minutes to 2.
I'm a bike rider, and in the morning, I really despise riding my bike next to the road because I can just taste it.
Fuller understands that vehicles have different needs. Modern car engines only need 2 minutes to warm up. If a car is older, it'll take longer. So when police are looking for violators, officers will take that into account when doling out $250 tickets. Fuller doesn't have data for Carbondale's air quality. Ideologically, though, preventing unnecessary idling can only improve it. She'll make her case in front of the town trustees at their meeting on December 13th. You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Wyatt Orm. If you missed the first part of today's show, you can find a podcast on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Also online, you can sign up for Aspen Public Radio's ForkFed digital newsletter. ForkFed comes out every Friday, updating you on the week's news in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond. State Senator Carrie Donovan was in Aspen last week to check in with her constituents ahead of the 2017 legislative session. Allison stopped by Gondola Plaza and asked the first-term Democrat about representing the diverse political views in her district.
Not even a month after the election, what are you hearing from your constituents? What are some of the concerns right now?
Yeah, I think everyone is mixed emotions. You know, I come from a really diverse district, so it's kind of your classic 30-30-30 district, so all parties are really represented. So some people are really excited about the next administration, excited to see what campaign promises are fulfilled. Other half of the district is pretty concerned about what the next administration might choose to roll back. And so I think as a state senator, I just have to be on my toes and make sure that I'm protecting my district regardless of what happens in D.C.
Nationally, Democrats are trying to regroup and really figure out who they are representing. As you said, you are a Democrat from a very diverse district. Is there something they can learn about what you value and what you tell your constituents as far as getting voted in from such a diverse district?
I think in a district that's the size of mine and has so many different, great, wonderful identities, it really is about showing up, listening to the folks, and working hard. And if you don't do that, then you probably don't deserve to have the job of being a representative. So I'm really, I have 9 ski resorts, I have 3 rivers, I have more 14ers than I will ever be able to hike. I have one of the brightest red parts, I have one of the brightest blue parts. It's just an incredible, I really feel like Senate District 5 is representative of Colorado. So it's just a blast to be the senator. It's the hardest job I've ever had. It's the best job I've ever had.
So what concerns are you hearing from constituents that you're going to bring to the State House? Do you have any bills in mind, anything that you're going to try and carry through?
You know, one thing that I'm just constantly aware of is protections of our public lands. We will see what the next administration does in that arena. But regardless, our ski resorts are on our public lands. Our favorite picnic spots are on our public lands. Some of us have gotten married on public lands. So I will be a fierce voice for protecting and making sure our public lands stay public. Besides that, we have parts of the district that still haven't recovered economically. And I want to make sure that all parts of Colorado are being equally successful, and so I'm going to focus on that as well.
Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for coming out to the plaza.
That was State Senator Carrie Donovan speaking with Allison. Officials with the White River National Forest have proposed selling two pieces of land in El Jebel. Elizabeth Stewart Severy reports.
The two properties total about 70 acres of land adjacent to Crown Mountain Park and the Roaring Fork River. One parcel encompasses two single-family homes and a bunkhouse and houses seven Forest Service employees. It also has a mobile home pad, horse pastures, and vacant land. The other plot consists of about 40 acres along the river and is now used by wildlife, hikers, and fishermen. Forest Supervisor Scott Fitzwilliam says his agency will ensure that the ecology is protected through deed restrictions or other conservation plans as part of the sale. Fitzwilliam says the Forest Service can no longer pay for the upkeep of these properties and needs the money to improve other facilities. The public can learn more about the proposed sale tomorrow night at 5:30 at the Eagle County Community Center in El Jebel. Elizabeth Stewart Severy from the Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Officials broke ground Tuesday in Basalt for the Roaring Fork Apartments. The project will provide affordable housing unlike anything else in the valley.
The four-story building will have one- and two-bedroom apartments. There will be 56 units altogether. The site is on Emma Road, right by Highway 82 and a transit station. Basalt Mayor Jackie Whitsitt had this to say about the project's location as she addressed the small crowd.
We're walking distance to schools. This is exactly where housing should be, and it isn't always, right?
The Colorado Housing Finance Authority awarded the developer, Real America Companies, a tax credit, a little over $1 million a year for 10 years. This enables Real America to build at less cost. They then transfer the savings to the renters. The apartments will be priced between $450 and $1,450 per month. Income will determine the rents that tenants pay. All but 12 of the units will be rented out for significantly less than the area median income.
Lawmakers on the Joint Budget Committee have questions about how the state is managing wildlife programs and hunting and fishing permits. Correspondent Benta Berkland has the details.
The department manages parks and wildlife and water issues. The annual briefing is part of the budget writing process. Democratic Budget Committee member Millie Hamner of Dillon is worried about a proposed predator management plan.
My constituents I'm hearing from are very concerned about reducing the cougar and black bear densities by killing the animals to see if that is going to solve the problem.
Republican Representative Don Corum of Montrose doesn't want to see hunting and fishing licenses go up.
Talked to a guy the other day that rents cabins out. He had 27 hunters. They got one elk, out-of-state hunters, and they're not much interested in coming back, especially with a possible increase in fees.
Another Republican is wondering if the state needs to improve how it manages wild horses so they don't interfere with grazing. These are just a few of the questions that the department will answer later at a more formal hearing. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
Winter cyclists and pedestrians will soon have a wider sidewalk over Castle Creek Bridge as the city of Aspen tries out a snowy version of this past summer's Living Lab. Elizabeth Stewart Severy reports.
City staff says the recent trail extension was successful in providing a safer commute for bikers and pedestrians without affecting traffic. But the barriers used to separate the sidewalk from the vehicles were not winter ready. The new snow lab would again narrow traffic lanes using short vertical posts to separate the trail from cars and trucks. The winter experiment will help the city determine the best methods of snow removal and to ensure that RAFTA buses have enough room to pull out into traffic from the 8th Street stop. City Council plans to discuss the project on December 13th, and if it's approved, commuters can expect to see the new configuration on January 3rd. Elizabeth Stewart Severy, Aspen Public Radio News.
On any given night in Glenwood Springs, police officer Levi Blount could deal with meth addicts or stop sign runners. There's a decent chance both will ask where he's from. Wyatt recently accompanied Blount during one of his shifts and brings us this story about what it's like to be a British cop in small-town America.
If someone is robbing the Volkswagen dealership in Glenwood Springs, I'm about to find out. Officer Levi Blount has told me I need to stay behind him and a little to the right once we're out of the car, in case he needs to pull out his gun. We don't park in front of the dealership.
Because if there is somebody in there, the last thing you want them to know is that, hi, we're here.
Another officer is already on the scene. The two check in.
Everything's all locked up.
All clear. Yeah. Levi Blount is 32. He's been on the job for a couple of years now. He's a very tall man with a very wide smile. And he was holding a very large gun when he came into the police station to say he'd be right with me. The gun he was holding was his patrol rifle. It's an AR-15. Before each shift, he loads his personalized weaponry into the patrol car. And herein lies one of the biggest differences between policing in Glenwood and in Manchester, England, where he last worked. Most English cops walk around with a baton and mace. But here in Glenwood Springs?
Like, I have in the car a shotgun, a rifle, pistol, taser, spray. I've got bear spray.
Of course, Manchester is much bigger than Glenwood. It has 2 million people. Blount says he could tell the day of the week by the kind of crime coming through the door.
So, Sunday night, Monday night is murder, homicide night. Mm-hmm. Your Friday, Saturday, your drunken fights. Sunday's also domestics.
But in Glenwood?
You never know.
Last Thursday night, he and the other officers on duty took 7 people to jail. 1 week later...
In a 12-hour shift, 2 people rang us and said, can we have your help?
Guns and population aside, there are other systemic differences that have taken some getting used to. The Roaring Fork Valley doesn't have a detox center, for example. Officers take drunks and drug addicts either to the hospital or jail. In general, mental health resources are lacking here, which is quite different than England. But Blount left England. He was tired of living there.
So I kind of woke up a couple of years back and went, right, had enough of England. Weather sucks. I'm going to go do something different. 2 weeks later, I moved here.
705.
Last I spell.
We're now pulling people over for not stopping at a stop sign. One truck makes no attempt, so Blount pulls it over. As he's radioing in the driver's information, he gets a little taste of home.
Copy, lad. 1843.
So the dispatcher you just heard there, he's from Liverpool, in England.
Blount turns up the volume on the radio to teach me more about the accent.
28 Dillon, Mangalian, off of Stingray
Drive. It sounds like he has, like, marshmallows in his mouth because he's like, eh, eh. I can understand him fine, but most Americans are like, what?
Of course, Blount's accent makes him stand out too. A little later, the dispatcher asks Blount to call a young man who claims he's having trouble getting his stuff out of his newly ex-girlfriend's apartment.
You sound really familiar. Do you come into stores all the time?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the blonde-haired kid that works there.
Oh, yeah. Now I recognize you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
I'm just thinking, with it being 10:15...
Blount is reassuring and helpful on the phone. It's probably because of the time in Manchester. As an officer there, he just walked around with his baton and mace. Without a gun and not being in a car, he says he was forced to work on his communication skills. He also just likes interacting with people. But not everyone likes interacting with him. He arrests plenty of people who get in the back of the car and use his accent for something to pick on.
You know, they're sat in the back, handcuffed, and they're going to jail. So they're like, well, I'm going to get my 2 pence in.
It's doubtful they actually say that, but you get the drift. And at the end of the day, Levi Blount's job really is to listen. And like any good Englishman, he does so politely.
That's all for this week's Mountain Edition. I'm Allison Bektesh.
And I'm Wyatt Orm. To hear the show again or subscribe to our Mountain Edition podcast, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Tune in tomorrow at 3:30 for Valley Roundup. A panel of journalists join News Director Carolyn Zachariasen to provide analysis, insight, and commentary on this week's news.
Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.